I can literally see them.
Yeah, so
good evening, everyone. Good evening. You can go ahead and take your seats. We'll get started. So I'd like to welcome you to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Catherine, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Catherine.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, the Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms, which are right across the foyer on a small flight of stairs. And at this time, please silence your cell phones. Check to make sure they're on vibrate or on silent. And we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from getting up during the meeting and moving around so that people around you can listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. So I'll just read the preamble real quick for you. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other.
Just do this since my turn, okay?
And help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Okay. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So we encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting tonight pertaining to the stuff discussed tonight or any other questions about alcoholism. So this evening, we're discussing the second part of Steps 8 and 9. And I would like to welcome our two panel speakers who are going to share their experience and strength and hope with us. We have Don and Glenn. So let's welcome them. I just want to make sure
I can't hear.
That we're clapping for them.
Right.
So let's see. Step 8.
I just want to read this for you real quick. We have... Oh, I'm going right past it. Come on.
All right, so step 8 says that we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And step 9 is we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And we're going to start tonight on page 80 in the book, on the paragraph that starts, the chances are. So the chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How would she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with a girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous gal who has literally gone through hell for him. Okay.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Glenn Mifflin.
Hey, Glenn Mifflin.
Sobriety date is January 16th, 1995. Home group is a big book meeting in Ghent. We meet on Tuesday evenings at 5:30 over at Christ of St. Luke's. And I just wanted to get that out of the way. You're going to have to forgive me. I have allergy problems right now, and I can't hear anything I'm saying, much less what you guys say or anybody up here says. So I'm kind of in my own little cave, which is not unusual for me. I spent a lot of years doing that. But I'll do the best I can with this. If I don't speak loud enough or I speak too loud, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, I was married. Thanks. I was married for 29 years, and I was with this woman for 12 years before I got sober. 12 of the 25 years that I drank, and she was my drinking buddy for about a month and a half after we got married, and then she got left behind because I was way too good at it, and it caused a lot of problems in our life. From the get-go, she tried everything she could to stop me from drinking, to slow me down. We did our own little experiments using ice, pouring the beer over ice, that kind of stuff. But no matter what she did, I increased the volume to where I got what I wanted out of it, and that was a blackout most of the time. So by the time I got to the end of my drinking, she was, like it said, pretty wore out. She was done. She actually told me at one point that she wasn't going to sit here and watch me destroy myself anymore. She'd done that enough, and she left. As far as having other liaisons with other women, I was too busy drinking to do that. I know Bill says that in his book, in his story, but I don't necessarily believe it, but knowing what I know about Bill. But with me, it was true because I stayed home all the time. I didn't go to bars. I didn't do that kind of running around stuff. I was too scared to do that. I stayed at home. So, you know, I put this woman through a lot, and when it came time to talk to her about what I'd done and the mess I'd made, it was a long, detailed discussion about what I'd done and what I needed to do to make it right. I thought I did a good job with it. She didn't think I did as good a job as she needed me to do. So we were at loggerheads with whether I'd done it or not. As far as I'm concerned, I did. And my sponsor said I did. So, but that was a point of contention throughout the rest of our marriage, whether I'd actually made amends to her, whether I'd actually asked her what I could do to make it right. And she never did get over that. She brought it up every once in a while. But as it says in the book, we do what we can, and we leave it at that. I thought I'd cleaned up my side, and I didn't try to do any more than what I was supposed to do according to what the book says. Thanks.
Thanks, man. Donald Smith, alcoholic.
Donald Smith.
My sobriety date is October 16th, 1994. My home group is the West Ghent Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday nights. We have a book meeting and a discussion meeting. So all are welcome. Starts at 8 o'clock. I talked a little bit about this last week. I'm not going to get into too much detail because I have some business to clear up here before we get started. Yes. Last week when I was speaking, some people here remember it. Maybe some people were even here. But I said something that was not true, and I have been bothered by it since it came popping out of my mouth. There's a line written by William Silkworth that says, "These men may well have found a remedy for thousands of such situations. You may absolutely rely on everything they say about themselves." And I want you to be able to rely on what I say. And I was wrong with saying it. This is not really an amends. I was taught a long time ago that an amends is me making, you know, trying to make reparations and defense mending. I'm doing step 10, which says I promptly admitted it when I was wrong. And what I said last week was that I told everybody I had five people that lived in St. Louis that I had to make amends to, and all five had died. And I thank God for that. Well, only...
I did thank God.
But only one had died. And he weighed about 350 pounds, so he was like five people. I was trying to make a joke. I was not being serious with my with that. But thank you. I heard someone say they liked it. But I just wanted to say that because, you know, I was taught that I have to be honest in all things that I do. Rigorous honesty. And sometimes stuff just pops right out of my mouth that I don't really, it just goes. And it could be any number of reasons why that happens. You know, I could be wanting to impress you. I could be wanting to do, it could be that I'm an alcoholic and I do stupid stuff without thinking about it. I drove a guy out of a meeting. It was a service-related meeting. It was a steering committee meeting. It was a DCM way back 15 years ago. And this poor guy, I kept teasing him, and he got all upset about it. And he ran out of the room. He came back, and he ran him out of the room again. He came back and ran out of the room. I was laughing because I was teasing him. And I told my sponsor the next morning when I called him, and he said, "That's a problem." And I had to go back and apologize to him personally, to each one of the people in the room personally, and then go to the meeting the next month and apologize to the meeting because the meeting is a spiritual entity. So that's how I learned how to do this kind of stuff, and I wanted to make sure I clean that up a little bit, or a lot, because it's not appropriate to be sitting up here and talking when I'm not accurately representing my life and what happened. Having said that, I was not trying to avoid the domestic problems issue because Glenn mentioned Bill. I heard someone describe Bill Wilson as a serial philanderer when he was sober. I'm not quite that bad. But I did a lot of running around when I was drinking, and I was married once for like 9 months. And I had lots of girlfriends, and some official girlfriends and some unofficial girlfriends. But when I got sober, I was alone because my attitude towards everybody, particularly people who were close to me and wanted to be close to me, was, you know, leave me alone. If you don't like what I'm doing, you know where you met me, leave me alone. If you don't like what I'm doing, just get the hell out of here. And they all eventually did, because they're all not stupid. They gave me exactly what I wanted. So when I got sober, there was nobody around. And when I did my fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh step, I told this story last week, that was true. I did my sixth step, my seventh step, and I walked out of the apartment into the room, and about a half an hour, 45 minutes later, an hour or so, I got a phone call from a woman that I knew in St. Louis who called me out of nowhere. She didn't have my phone number, she just called. And I got a chance to make my amends with her. So, you know, I hung up the phone, and it wasn't 45 minutes later, then another woman friend in St. Louis, not in Springfield, Missouri, she called me on the same day and asked how I was doing. And so I got a chance to make amends with her. You know, that's God working in my life. I could never have done that. I hadn't talked to these women in years and years. And, you know, out of nowhere, two of them called me on the same day. So I was able also to make amends with my wife, my ex-wife, which was an amazing conversation, and it worked out really well. But I had all of these I won't go into all of them, but, you know, that's enough said about that. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. All right, moving right along on page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, shall we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve the other person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it should not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found that this is the best course to take.
Thanks. I have another thing I have to ask for you guys to do. If I repeat something Donald says, please forgive me. It's not on purpose. I can't hear him say it. So if I do, it's not an entirely plagiaristic thing.
You just never listen.
To what? Again, I didn't have the problem with somebody else coming into my life outside of my marriage. I was too busy romancing alcohol, and that's what I did. I really didn't care about a social life at that point in time. I just could give a shit about it. That's just the way it was. And so I didn't have to have the opportunity where I had to let her know about something that she didn't know about. I mean, she was pretty well clear on the fact that I was a drunk because I did that around her all the time. So I didn't have to explain that to her. But I did have the opportunity to have this explained to me in a different situation when she had her opportunity to make amends with me. And having read this, been through it several times, I'm glad she didn't tell me about who it was, and I'm glad she followed the script that they laid out here. It would be a real devastation to have run into that and seen what, you know, the person it, and having to have to deal with that. But as far as me, you know, I'm pretty lucky, I guess. I had my eyes on the alcohol, and I didn't really have my eyes on anything else. So I was pretty ho-hum drunk, as it were. Thanks.
One thing I've always liked about Alcoholics Anonymous is how practical it is. It is something. There's a certain amount of real-life, real-world experience in this book. And it really is helpful for me when I'm on this kind of a mission that I don't really know what I want to say and how I'm supposed to say it and how much do you divulge. And I think that this is a really great advice no matter what the situation is. That it says, we feel that we have no right to involve another person in anything. So anytime I'm making amends and there's another person involved, I have to ask that person for permission, or I can't bring them up, or I can't go make amends. It's about that simple. That's the way I was taught. Like I said, though, I didn't have a lot of this when I was, because I was single when it all happened. By the time I got back to Norfolk, by the time I got sober, I had burned up all of my relationships and the women and the people that I needed to make amends to and fix. Most of those had been done. My job today is to not do that kind of stuff again. So, anyway, that's all I got for that.
All right, thank you. And moving right along to page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents for whom years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring its way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Mom. In a grand, the wind stopped blowing."
Donald said that I'm like a bull in a china closet with this amend stuff because I have a lot of them to do, because for some reason I tend to be a little bit I hurt people's feelings a lot. I really do. And I'm not going to talk about intent. That's what I do. So I have to clean that up a lot. But I like what it talks about, not having anything more to do than sobriety. At one time, that idea kind of floated into my consciousness, and I was told that, you know, just staying sober wasn't enough. That there are a lot of things that are involved in life that is beyond just being sober. And I can correct and do things better in all those avenues if I'm willing to do what it says in the book. So, you know, I had my flirting with that selfish thought that, you know, all I had to do was be sober and everything would be hunky-dory. But the idea is it's not staying sober that's the problem with me. Once I get sober, I've got this crazy-ass mind that's going to get me into situations that I shouldn't be in. And if I do the steps the way they're proposed in the book, and if I really work hard at trying to be a different person today, that mind of mine will start to be different. It'll start acting a little bit different. It'll still go back to the old way given the opportunity, but it'll be different. And I won't be sitting there in the cellar wishing for the wind to stop blowing, you know, and everything will be okay. I have to put it more into it than just staying sober. I have to remember that on a daily basis even, because it's real easy to get caught up in, oh, I'm not drinking, so it's not perfection. It's, you know, just do the best you can. Well, unfortunately, that I'll take advantage of that if I look in that direction very long. You know, I got to shoot for perfection, and if I don't make it, I got to be okay with that. But I still got to shoot for perfection. I really do. And I've come to understand that's not being a perfectionist. That's being a person that's looking to do the best he can on a daily basis and staying out of the results. Thanks.
Thank you. I kind of look at it like same way. You know, step six says I'm entirely ready. And that means, that word right there means I'm entirely ready to work the steps, to try to do better, to try to do the stuff I should be doing in my life. I really don't think, you know, when I got here, I was told that I had to be sober, that when I get drunk, I'm blocking my, let me back up a minute, that I have a spiritual problem and I have a spiritual malady, a mental obsession and a physical craving for alcohol. These are the best areas of my life that alcohol has affected. And that once I clean this stuff up, I have to apply spiritual principles to do that, and then my mind clears up and my body clears up. And not necessarily in that order, body and mind. But what happens is that once I stop working the steps and stop working the spiritual program, I go backwards And first I lose my spiritual connection, then I lose my mental health, and then I get drunk. And I really believe that. I don't believe a person is sober just because they haven't had a drink. I mean, I don't think anybody in this room who knows an alcoholic that doesn't work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous could tell me that they know people who have not worked the steps, are alcoholics, and are really sober people. I've met too many nutbag people who don't work the steps. They say, I don't need to do that. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. Well, you know, I've seen them, and they just start, you know, they start losing it. And at some point, because, you know, I don't know about you folks, but I had a high propensity for pain and confusion. That was normal life for me. So at some level, when I'm getting sober, I can kind of go back to that little spot and live there like a nutbag for a long time. And it seems like it's the okay thing to do. So, you know, it is absolutely necessary, I think, you know, to do this kind of stuff. And I think that God gave me this program so that I can do it. Not so I can talk about it, not so I can walk around and you know, whatever. But I actually have to work the program. How many times have you gone to a meeting, people raise their hand and want to talk about the ninth step and nobody can talk about it? Because most people don't do the ninth step, or they don't finish the ninth step. People with unfinished amends get drunk. That's what I've heard. That's what happened to Dr. Bob, and I believe that. Let's see. You know, this line in here where it says, passing all understanding is the patience of mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, perhaps be dead. You know, if these folks were living today, they'd be called all kinds of names, like, you know, what's the word? Codependence and helping, you know. But I tell you what, my father, maybe he should not have done what he did. He helped me pay my bills when I was in a really bad shape. 39 years old, I can't even pay my own bills. But he was there and he helped me stay in my apartment so I didn't die. And sometimes we need those people, you know. And I don't have any problem, and I don't think badly about them. I don't think they need to have some kind of program to take care of that kind of stuff. Although, Al-Anon, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. Anyway, I will say this one other quick thing. It says, the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. I had heard a long time ago, someone said this, and I can't remember where I heard it, but if, you know, how many folks, when you go to meetings, you hear people say that I'm powerless over people, places, and things? You ever hear that? You know, do you know how much BS that is? We just read this thing, and it says that I'm a tornado roaring through people's lives. That's power. I can mess somebody's day up in a heartbeat, isn't it? You know, I can ruin the way they feel. I can ruin their finances. I can do all this stuff to them. So I have power over people, places, and things. What I don't have power over is myself. I can't keep myself from ruining people, places, and things. And that's where my focus has to lie on me and what I do and how I conduct myself. And that's the reason why we have a spiritual program, because I don't know how to do that. I live my whole life screwing other people over as a matter of policy and principle. Right? That's what I did. And I started at a young age, 14, 15 years old, and I had a whole life of doing all that. So I absolutely think, you know, selfish and inconsiderate habits kept the home in turmoil. I kept everybody's home in turmoil. I mean, we won't even go back to talk about the domestic side of this, what we just talked about earlier, but I kept a lot of people's homes in turmoil. And it is absolutely a fact. When I talk to people, they say, well, you know, I'm not drinking today, so I don't have to run out and finish these amends. And they come to me and they say, well, I've got this problem. Well, what's going on? Well, maybe you haven't finished your amends. Maybe you don't know what it means to be humble. You know, Glenn talked last week about honesty, fearlessness, and so all this stuff that we learn how to do. We're practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous when we make amends. At least let me rephrase that. I'm practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous when I make amends. I mean all of them. I'm being honest. I'm being humble. I'm a certain amount of anonymity involved. I'm doing all of this stuff that I have been taught how to do as I work the steps. And the first thing is selflessness. You know, I don't care how other person takes that amends. I'm going to go do it because it's the right thing to do. I have to clear off that's my side of the street, and how you take it is your business. That's up to you. But if I don't learn how to practice in real time, walking around real time, the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to have trouble. Because the 12th step tells me what? That having had a spiritual awakening, I practice all of these principles in my lives. And how do I know how to do that if I don't know, if I don't do step 9?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, moving right along to page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
This part of the book tells me that I don't get to just say, oh, I'm sorry, I did that, because I've done that a lot. I have to sit down with them and go over what I did, what harms I'd done, and I have to ask them what it is I can do to make it right. That's not an easy thing for somebody who's as selfish and self-centered as I am to do. And I can tell you that if somebody hits this point without a real good understanding of a power greater than themselves, they're not going to do a good job with this, because it takes a lot of courage to confront people when you're the one that's done the harm and you're the one that has to make it right. So my higher power provides me with that courage. I didn't realize that, but it's true. That courage comes from somewhere else, not me, because I'm not going to do that on my own. That's just something I don't do. And I can give you an example. I had everything lined up to talk to my dad and my mom. And at one point in my life, my dad's mother had died, and I didn't like my grandmother a lot. And so when I missed her funeral, I didn't care. But it hurt my dad that I wasn't there. So I was talking to him about what, you know, I'd gotten sober and I needed to talk to him. He said, no, you don't. He said, I don't need to hear it. Just do what you're doing. So, you know, he basically short-circuited the whole thing, didn't give me a chance to say what I needed to say. Well, no, say what I wanted to say, not what I needed to say. He heard all he needed to hear. I was sober, and that was it. So I had to be okay with that, because I'm not in outcomes now. Those outcomes are up to God, my higher power. So I had to be okay with that. But I had another situation just recently, and I'm going to lay this out there. I'd treated somebody pretty badly. And I was okay with the fact that I treated her badly, because it took me 2.5 years to get to the point where I needed to make the amends. So I talked to my sponsor about it, and I called this, or I actually sent a text to this person. We got a date together so that I could meet with her. And I told her, you know, what I'd done. This is what I did. This is the damage that I feel that I've done. And then I asked the question, you know, what is it that I can do to make it right? And this is how I know God's working in my life. She came back at me with, well, you know, you have this attitude or behavior in your life that pushes people away. I'm going to call it, you know, the guy that, you know, the guy that the mean guy, the mean guy. And I have this mean attitude sometimes, and I'll use that guy to push people away, people I don't want to work with, people that I, you know, I don't want to have to deal with, that kind of thing. And she said, what I want you to do to make this right is I want you to go through the process of trying to get rid of that character defect. I don't know about anybody else. That's the first time I've encountered somebody wanting me to do a character defect as an amends. But she asked me to do that. And I've been trying real hard to work on this to please.
I'm trying.
I'm not perfect. But, you know, I've done inventory on it. I've talked to my sponsor that I haven't actually done, you know, the fifth step on it yet. But, you know, he said he's been pushing this emotional sobriety. He said maybe this will get you over the edge with emotional sobriety. So he might be right. I don't know. But I've really been looking at this character defect really, really hard. And unfortunately, it's one of those that I like a lot. You wouldn't think that pushing people away is a good thing, but for somebody like me, I like pushing people away because I don't want you to get to know me. Even today, I don't want you to get to know me. And so I'll, you know, bring out the little character and he'll sweep you away and get you out of the way. So I've had to start looking at this, and I can tell you that I've never had such an intensive inventory in my life, trying to see what this is hooked to, trying to see what I can ask to be removed, you know, because I got to know what's got to be removed. It's not just that. Something else has got to be removed. And I've been in a lot of, you know, doing a lot of meditation on this. And if it's not doing anything else, it's getting me in touch with these principles in this particular area of my life that I maybe not have not had as much effort in, that I needed to put more effort into. So I'm really glad that I get to do this. I'm not pleased with the fact that I have to do it, but I'm really glad that I get to. Thanks.
Though their defects may be glaring. you know, a remorseful mumbling that I'm sorry won't fit the bill. I just, you know, when I remember when I first went to my sponsor about what I was going to do about these amends, he said, a remorseful mumbling won't fit the bill. And I said, you know, that can't be, you know, I don't want to do that, you know. And I said, what am I supposed to do? He says, you have to make reparations. What? Reparations? What are you, nuts? But I did it. And the thing is, you know, he taught me, and all my sponsors have taught me, that the most important thing about doing it the first time is that you'll know how to do it the second time. And you know you can do it better the third time. You do it better the fourth time. You do it better the fifth time. And you know the success builds on success. And you'll start, things will start happening, and you'll want to do it. I remember when I first read, when I first read this, it says, we ask our Creator the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. What is that? Yeah, I'm going to get sick. You know, I thought these are wimpy things. But you know how hard it is to be patient? Do I have to tell you? I'm in a room full of my peoples. You know how hard it is to be tolerant, to show kindliness to others and love? Those are not easy things for wimpy people. Those are hard things for strong people. And I'm not any of those things when I'm drinking. And when I'm living in untreated alcoholism, I'm even worse. I'm none of those things. But having said that, it says the spiritual life is a theory. I have to live it. I'm gonna tell my story now. About 10 years ago, I had a bunch of people I was sponsoring. I was the DCM for District 14. I had a home group. I had a job in the home group. I was working the steps. I was doing all this stuff. I just bought a house. I'm doing great. I'm sorry, did I just say that? I'm doing great. I'm doing great. And I walked into Home Depot and I bought a vanity and I took it home and I set it up and the vanity was not what I wanted, so I took it back and I told the lady that I didn't want this vanity, I wanted a new one, another one, and she said, "All right, here's your money and you can get the vanity, it's right over there." Okay. So I went and got the vanity. I'm in what I consider a great spiritual place. I got the vanity, I put the money in my pocket and walked out the door with it. And when most of y'all know that I come from, you know, I had to turn right to become a Democrat. So I was walking, I got over on Home Depot, all right. So I called my dad on the phone, "Guess what just happened?" He goes, "All right, you got over at Home Depot." I set it all up, did all this stuff. I called my sponsor in the morning to tell him I got over on Home Depot. He said, "You did what?" And I went, uh-oh, that's not what I wanted to hear. And so he said, "Explain this to me." So I told him what I did, and he said, "Well, that's a problem. Do you know why it's a problem?" "No, I got over on Home Depot." These people, and then it had 1,000 reasons why it's okay. Now, I pull that out of my I'm drinking routine, right? That's my box with it that has all my drinking rationalizations in it. It's Home Depot. I can do this. I can do that. They're this. They're that. They're this. It's everybody else's fault, but I just, you know. So I had to write inventory. I did all this stuff. I had to read it to him. We talked about it. And he says to me, he goes, "Well, what, you know what to do now, right? You know what you have to do." And I said, "Well, I have to go back to the store?" And he goes, "Well," I said, "I could be arrested for stealing." And he says, "Are you a thief?" You hurt my feelings. Where's some of that patience and kindness and tolerance I hear so much about it? And I'm like, I don't want to have to do that, you know? Yeah. I mean, I could go to jail. They could arrest me right on the spot. He goes, "They may very well, and they'd be within their rights to do that." He goes, "So I'm not going to tell you." This is what he told me. He says, "I'm not going to tell you what to do because you get the chance to choose what level of spirituality and where your sobriety is going to stand and what you're going to do with your life. I'm not telling you to do anything. But you know what you have to do. And you know what you ought to do. But it's your decision to make," he says. "And remember, anything is acceptable in Alcoholics Anonymous as long as you can handle the consequences." And I'm thinking, all of a sudden all these doors of escape opened up, right? And I thought about it, and as I thought about it, all the doors started shutting. And I said, "Well," and I went back and I made my amends and I told the guy what I had done, and he got mad at me because they had written it off their inventory and set the old one up in the work lunchroom as a teaching tool for the cashiers. And they had, "What's wrong with this thing?" And I'm like going, "Well," I said, "Well, I got to do something. What do you want me to do?" He goes, "Take the money and spend it inside the store. And that's all you have to do." Now, you know, before I walked in that door, I was afraid I was going to go to jail. And I had all this fear going on in my life, but I also knew that I couldn't live a sober life and not fix this and not go and make sure I'd done what I'm supposed to be doing to make it right based on what he told me to do, not what I thought was the right thing to do. So, and that's the same thing about making this apology this afternoon when I first started. I can't live my life in that kind of off kilter. I've got to do something so that I'm back centered in my life. And when I'm centered in life, that means I'm centered in God. I'm the spiritual theory. The spiritual life is not a theory. I'm actually living it. And it's really important to do that, because I don't want to go back out and go back to the place I was before I got here. And because it was a horrible, horrible place where people die and they crap on themselves and they mumble through stuff and they fall down and break bones and do all this stuff. At the end of the line, that's what it looks like. Or I'm going to be meeting all my friends underneath the underpass with Sterno and cheap bottles of vodka. So I'm not going back there. You know. And I'm just going to say one little quick thing. I'm so grateful that my sponsor said to me, I'm not telling you what to do. Because it really made me responsible for my sobriety and what I'm supposed to be doing in this life. I don't have to walk around having people tell me what to do. I just do it because I know it's the right thing to do. And I got that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have that before.
Thank you. Thank you, Donald. Okay, moving right along, we're still on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
There are a couple that I had to really look at very... very straightforward, that I didn't want to do. So I got to postpone them a little while until I got right with it. But I still had to go and do it. But the ones that they're talking about here, I had a girlfriend that I, you know, we'd been together for a long time, back before I met my wife. And I just kind of up and left her, and I felt like that was a bad thing to do and that I should correct that. And my sponsor said, "You got her phone number?" I said, "No." He said, "You know where she lives?" "No." He said, "If God wants you to do it, he'll put her in front of you. Leave her alone." I went, okay. So I have to live with those things that I have done in my life. I did have a continuing thing with my father. And it took me a long time to get right with that. And he had died by the time that I was ready to talk to him. So, again, I got to be okay with the fact that I had come to an understanding and I could leave him alone even though he was dead. You know, I can leave him out of it and I can move on with that. So... the idea that they're putting forth here is not being tied to the result of what I'm doing. I'm tied to the fact that I'm going through the process. And I have to constantly remember that. Because if I don't, I can get really caught up in the fact that I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. You know, that doesn't matter. That's not what we're here for. What I'm here for is to do what I need to do at that any given time, what I need to do. And God will provide that avenue if it's time to do that. And if it's not, I get to stay with it until it's time. And today I'm okay with that. Thanks.
Thanks, Glenn. I had a twin brother that died from alcoholism. And he died before I got sober. And I had a lot of remorse about the way I treated him, what I said to him. I mean, just horrible stuff. It was just really... But we're twin brothers, you know, and we were... I knew him a long time. I could say anything I wanted to him. But I was never really able to make amends with him. And everybody that sponsored me said, you ought to write him a letter. got to write him a letter. And I kept thinking, that's pop psychology. Like writing a no damn letter. And then for some reason, I read this in the book and it says, write a letter. You know, and I thought, well, you know, I'm supposed to take the instructions in what it says in the book, and there are instructions, and they tell me what to do. So I did that. And then I went down to his, to where he's buried in North Carolina, and I read it to him over his grave. It did something for me. I don't know if it did anything for him. But it was very moving for me. I'll just leave it there. And I love this where it says, when we're making amends, we must be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. Never servile or scraping. I was always afraid when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous that I was going to have to be, you know, kissing everybody's butt and walking around on eggshells and not having a butt, you know. But that's not the way it is. I get to be exactly who I am. Sometimes I'm a jerk. A lot of times I'm a jerk, like Glenn. But he's my hero. role model.
I'm glad he can't hear you.
I know. he can.
What did he say?
That you're my role model. But he's been a good friend of mine for a long time, so I can tease him. But the thing is that I get a chance to learn about, to be who I am, live with all those parts of me that are what they are. And God will remove them or not, and God puts people in my life or not that I have to make amends to or can make amends to. And I need to say this. When I got sober, I was working in tracks, records, and tapes at Ward's Corner, and a woman walked in that I knew when I was drinking had been friends with. We'd been more than friends for a long time. And she didn't even recognize me when I said hello to her. But she took me, she said, I got to talk to you. Oh, okay. You know? And I get off of work, I go outside, I said, come on, let's go over to Patty's. You remember Patty's, when it used to be Ward's Corner? We go into Patty's, and she proceeds to get to do her ninth step amends with me. She hadn't seen me in 10 years. She was sober 10 years and gave me her ninth step amends. So I'm here as a result of the ninth step amends, because she gave me her phone number. She asked what she'd do to make it right. I didn't say what most men think I should have said. I asked for money, and I was drinking low-end vodka, so I was buying half gallons for $4.99 a bottle. So I asked for $10 and three double shots of Stoli on the rocks, and not to make me one of her, whatever. Which she did. She gave me her phone number, and eventually I called her, and eventually I came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a direct result of doing step nine. So I'm telling you, it has a lot of power to it. There's a lot of stuff there that is really, really helpful. You don't ever can tell. And the thing I want to say this, even though you hear it all the time, it's really important to remember that you cannot and should not bother with what the other person's response is. But I really believe that one of the reasons why step nine is such a powerful spiritual step is that we're finally coming out of our heads, not only putting it into practice and action, I'm also allowing somebody else an opportunity to lose their resentment. Whether they take it or not, it's their thing, it's not on me. But I just, you know, a resentment, forgiveness means to be free of a resentment. If I've gone to somebody that I've really torqued off, they're walking around with that too, quite possibly. So I get a chance to allow them to practice forgiveness in their own lives. Whether they take it or not, again, is up to them. But I really do believe that's part of why it's such a good, that's a powerful spiritual thing. We're going to talk about the promises next if we get a minute. And that's the reason why all that stuff happens, I think, because it brings some spiritual awakening and some spiritual stuff to people in the world.
Thank you. Right, and continue on page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past and wish to shut the door.
We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly and sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So, John, you have about 30 to 60 seconds.
I just want to thank Donald for saying something nice while I couldn't hear him, so it would figure out that way. Anyway, I just want to bring up the fact that there are a lot of promises throughout the book, and a lot of promises throughout the steps, not just here at the ninth step. There's a lot of them, and I didn't know that until somebody took me through the book and showed me where they are. So please look for them. They're out there. And I think they're pretty extravagant promises to a guy that's sitting here trying to get sober and looking at all this stuff. Yeah, that's pretty extravagant. So I take the question with a grain of salt, and I'm glad that some of this stuff has happened to me. It continues to happen depending on how well my spiritual condition is, and that'll be it. Thanks.
Yeah, same. Everything that Glenn said, I want to agree with. But I want to say this too.
What?
Nothing. Listen to the tape. I just want to say this though. I'd be remiss if I didn't say this. I don't know how many people listen to Joe and Charlie tapes. They do a great version of this. If you stick alcohol in there, do you even know if you ever wonder if you have a spiritual problem with alcohol? Will the alcohol solve your spiritual problem? You should put alcohol in this. It is, I mean, first time I did it, I laughed my ass off. I mean, I laughed a lot. And real quick, because it says, I will never forget this as long as I live reading this. It says, no matter how far, when I'm drunk, no matter how far down the scale I have gone, I will see that my experience can benefit others. I think that is so funny. But in reality, I know I'm hurrying, trying to. You know, these promises for me are on a daily basis. You know, if I do this stuff daily, this stuff is in my life all the time, and that is the most remarkable thing about it. And then when I first read them, I thought they were extravagant promises, but I think that I don't think they are now, and I think they're just a small sliver of what I end up getting when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is just words on a page. What really happens is much more. It's just huge. It's just, yeah, I'm doing my Donald Trump thing. It's huge. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Donald and Glenn. Thank you so much. Woo-hoo! Okay, at this time, we will pass the seventh tradition basket. And, okay, so the seventh tradition basket's going around. The seventh tradition state to every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Thanks. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might cover us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The alcohol contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements?
Okay, I do have one for the Simple Actions Group. There's some pink flyers that are up on the table here, which that is our literature table, so anything that, the only thing that's for sale on there are books. Everything else is free, but these pink flyers are for the Suburban Speakers, so we'll get to the end of 12 steps. We're going to have Suburban Speaker on November 30th. So, I can't remember if that's before or after Thanksgiving. But, alright, so, you'd be sick of the turkey, or you want to get rid of all the turkey, bring it to potluck. So you'll come here on Monday, November 30th, and hear a great speaker from Gloucester. And this is why.
Big Book in Ghent is having their speaker, and we're it's my home group, I'm sorry. It's November 17th. We have two speakers, Debbie B, who's actually here, and Ed B from Virginia Beach, and they're going to be talking to us about shortcomings.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
All right, anybody else? Okay, awesome. Thank you, Marie. All right, this group is Simple Actions, is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would all home group members please raise your hand? Strong. All right. And newcomers, is there anyone here that's in their first 30 days? We'd like to get you to know you. If you could please just introduce yourself by your first name only. Anyone would like to introduce themselves? All right, have no fear. We would love to see you today after the meeting. And again, the literature table over here in the sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right, if you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, you can talk to one of the people with their hands raised or come up to the front table. We'll have someone up here answering questions about sponsorship. That would be Lydia and Debbie. They'll be up here answering any questions you might have. And reminder, smokers, after the meeting, please try to move away from the front door. Way from the front door. Way, 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 way from the front door. And at closing, you guys, I'd like to thank the panel again for sharing your experience. Thank you guys for all who participated. After we clean up, everyone's invited and encouraged to continue the conversation at dinner after the meeting, which will be at Plaza del Sol, which is on 22nd and Colonial, right down the street. Please join us at this time. It's closed. Oh, we have to take care of us. Yeah. We're over. We'll skip it tonight. We'll just do more. Harmony, would you like to take us out, please?
Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation,